This is the National Conversation with All Things Considered. I'm Ari Shapiro, and each night we're here to answer your questions.
Hi, this is Terry Fullerton calling.
Greg Gomez.
This is Earl Goodman in Tulsa, and my question is,
how do we know COVID-19 was not something released on purpose?
What are the implications for vaccine being developed if there are already several different strains of this?
I'm a little bit confused in the end what guidelines I should be following.
What is known about the use of UV light to fight the coronavirus?
I know that COVID-19 is a respiratory virus, but can it also be transmitted in the blood?
Thank you.
Thank you.
NPR journalists and outside experts are on hand tonight to offer solid facts, tell you what we know, and correct some of the misinformation that's floating around. And when we don't know something, we'll tell you that too. Send us your questions about the pandemic and the way we live now at npr.org/nationalconversation. On Twitter, use the hashtag NPRConversation. Each night, we begin by answering the question, what happened today? Well, today, the death toll in the U.S. has surpassed 51,000 cases. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo said the U.S. should have done more earlier to fight the virus.
We closed the front door with a China travel ban, which was right, but we left the back door open because the virus had left China. So, what is the lesson? An outbreak anywhere is an outbreak everywhere.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said yet another relief bill is on the way to help state and local governments.
We look forward to doing it as soon as possible because jobs are at stake, protection of our people, the health and well-being of the American people are at stake, and the sooner we get this done, the better.
President Trump signed the latest relief bill. It provides nearly $500 billion for small businesses, hospitals, and testing. At the signing, the president said his comment yesterday about ingesting disinfectants was meant to be sarcasm.
That was done in the form of a sarcastic question to the reporters.
The president and vice president took no questions at tonight's coronavirus task force briefing. Well, you've asked us a lot of questions about the spread of the coronavirus and the data behind it. So joining us now to answer some of those questions, we have Dr. Ashish Jha. He's director of the Harvard Global Health Institute. Thanks for joining us on a Friday night.
Thanks for having me.
So, Dr. Jha, this week we learned that the first COVID-19 death in the U.S. actually occurred weeks before initially reported. Officials in California said an individual there died on February 6th of this year. That's well before the first reported death in Washington state. What are the implications of this discovery?
Yeah, so I think this is pretty significant because it takes about 3 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks between onset of, let's say, between getting infected and dying. And so that means that person probably was infected in mid-January, if not earlier. And it suggests to us that this virus was circulating in California as early as, you know, kind of early to mid-January. That's a good few weeks before we had any suspicion that virus was in the United States. So it's possible that the virus was even here at the end of last year.
Huh. All right, let's take a listener question. This first one comes from a doctor in Des Moines, Iowa.
Hi, I'm Dr. Lynn Rankin, a neurologist, and I'm wondering what the all-cause death rate is doing during this pandemic. People may be dying with coronavirus, not just of coronavirus, meaning they may suffer a stroke or heart attack precipitated by the virus, but not know they are infected. So are all deaths in the United States being investigated for coronavirus?
She used the phrase the all-cause death rate. Is that just the death rate of people dying from anything, including but not limited to coronavirus?
Exactly. And what we've seen, certainly in the last month or so, is a pretty substantial increase in total number of deaths across all the cities where we've seen outbreaks of coronavirus. So we think that we're capturing a lot of deaths, but I think the doctor who's asking this question is absolutely right, that there are probably a whole lot of people dying of what looks like maybe other diseases where coronavirus is really a major contributing factor, and we may not be capturing them.
Yeah. And would we ever know? I mean, if this person has died in the midst of the pandemic and we think they died of a heart attack or stroke, but it actually was related to the coronavirus, is that something we would ever know?
Only if we tested them, right? Only if we tested them for coronavirus. And given the limitations in the testing, we're not testing everybody who's dying. So I am confident we're missing a lot of people who are dying of coronavirus.
All right. Our next question is also about the accuracy of the numbers. This comes from Vince in Cleveland, Ohio.
I'm trying to figure out whether these deaths are corona or not. And my question is, can we go back to April in 2019 and see how many deaths were in the state of New York. And I don't care what kind of deaths, just any kind of death, all deaths. And then go back to this year and compare how many deaths we have this year, all deaths, not just COVID related, and see what the numbers look like. They have to be way higher, right? I'm trying to tell all my buddies because everybody doesn't believe it. And I'm like, listen, this is easy to prove. All we have to do is go back on some stats on a couple months last year, February, March, April, and compare the deaths in one state.
Is that safe to say that if a certain number of people died in February of this year in New York and a lower number of people died in February of last year in New York, that whole difference is because of COVID-19?
So whole difference may not be. And of course, one of the things is because we're doing all of this social distancing, we've seen deaths from other diseases come down, right? Obviously, car accident deaths have gone way down because people aren't driving as much. Yeah. Heart attacks and stroke deaths are down because people are just not as active. So it's a little bit complicated to sort out. We have seen excess mortality in places like New York, in places like the UK, compared to historical time periods. But it's a little bit difficult to sort out because, of course, it's in the context of the fact that people are living very different lives right now than they were in April of 2019.
Right. That's really interesting. Well, if you have a question for Dr. Ashish Jha, send it to us at npr.org/nationalconversation. You can also ask it on Twitter using the hashtag NPRConversation. And our next question is from Rich. It's about flattening the curve.
If we do nothing, just live our lives as before, the curve will show a high spike soon. More people will get sick and more people will die in the next few weeks. However, that same curve shows that the pandemic will end much sooner and many more people will have immunity to the virus. So my question is, over a 5 or 10 year period, will more people die if we slow the spread and lengthen the time period, or if we let the virus spread fast and come to a close? It's a devil's choice, but I'm curious. Thank you.
Devil's choice, indeed. We often get variations of this question. I think a lot of people are asking it. Dr. Jha?
Yeah, it is a good question. So let's put some issues to rest here. I think we would be much worse off if we had a sudden spike now. And let me walk people through it. First of all, if we flatten it out over months or years, one thing that'll happen is our health systems won't get overwhelmed. And the advantage of that is everybody who's sick, who needs care, will get care. What we saw in Italy was mortality rates went way up because people who could have been saved under normal circumstances weren't able to be saved because the hospitals were just overflowing. So that's one issue. The second thing is I really think the whole fight against coronavirus is a fight against time. We're going to learn much more about therapies. We're going to hopefully develop a vaccine. And that means I would much rather get coronavirus 6 months from now than today, because my guess is our mortality rates will get better over time.
So today, doctors just don't have enough information about how to treat patients with the disease, and 6 months or a year from now, they might have a much better sense of what to do to help people who are sick.
Exactly. So, you know, if you're going to get sick, better to wait, because we'll have more experience, and I'm hoping we'll have more therapies.
Okay, let's just briefly go to two questions that are on similar topics here.
Ellisburg, Vancouver, Washington. When a person gets the virus and they die from it, does the virus die with them, or does the body still contaminate others?
Hello, this is Cynthia Mahoney. I'm calling from Glendale, Arizona. And I was wondering if COVID-19 is killed during the cremation process, or if the germs were being released into the atmosphere during that process.
Dr. Jha, do we know the answer to that question?
Yeah, those are two good questions, related questions. First of all, I'm going to mess with people a little bit by saying we're not really sure whether to call a virus alive or dead, because in many ways, viruses are not alive. They don't have any of the properties of living beings. They only come to exist in the context of living tissue.
Sure.
So the issue is, I think that people are getting at, is are viruses still contagious? Can you get sick by touching somebody who's dead? And the answer there is that there is some preliminary evidence that depending on how you handle dead bodies, you can get sick from it. So that's why there are a lot of cremation techniques about how to manage people who've died from coronavirus.
Dr. Ashish Jha, director of the Global Health Institute at Harvard, thank you very much.
Thanks so much for having me.
And just before we have to wrap up the segment, I want to bring in NPR science correspondent Joe Palca. Joe, it's good to have you here.
Nice to be here.
And I wanted you to be here because the FDA is urging patients and healthcare workers to not use hydroxychloroquine to treat COVID-19 patients outside of a hospital or clinical trials. This was the malaria drug that President Trump had been touting. And our listeners have a lot of questions about it. One listener in New York asks, what about people who are not yet infected but self-medicating on hydroxychloroquine? Isn't this dangerous?
Potentially. It's an interesting question because I just checked with a scientist at the University of Minnesota who is looking into this in a carefully controlled way. There may be some positive effect for taking this for a few days if you're in a situation where you're exposed, but we don't know yet. And it's really dangerous to start messing around with drugs that have side effects before you know the answers. I mean, I looked up some of the side effects: headache, dizziness, loss of appetite, nausea, diarrhea, stomach pain, vomiting, rash. You don't want that. And if you don't need to take this drug, you probably shouldn't be taking this drug.
That is NPR science correspondent Joe Palca. Coming up, we're going to be discussing the research into vaccines for COVID-19. And you can hear more of our extensive coverage when you download the NPR One app. Go to the Explore tab and click on the coronavirus outbreak for a curated stream of stories. If you have questions, submit them on Twitter with the hashtag NPR Conversation. You're listening to The National Conversation with All Things Considered from NPR News.